face in my league. Got a blockbuster on my way and a pickup up my sleeve. They call my team insane, say I'm the one to beat. So you better bring your A game and start playing, cause every single week another win for me.
Yo, commissioner, you can just pay me now. City win first place, then take a bow. Finish on top, I'ma set the standard. Don't believe me, you could check the standings. When I draft, I make smart selections. Got more sleepers than a narcoleptic. Meet your match, kid, my lineup's nasty. It's far-fetched, thinking you might catch me. No surprise, I'm taking home the prize. Only time I rest is a playoff bye.
Welcome to another episode of the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational Podcast. I am Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst at friendsoffantasybenefits.com. We did it. We made it through an entire season of fantasy baseball. Barely for me. It's been an up and down road this year. Those of you who follow me on social media, at Justin Mason, FWFB on Twitter, or just find me on Facebook or Instagram, know that unfortunately I've had some family issues involving my wife and unborn child that have prevented me from releasing this. I recorded this last week with Clay Link, but unfortunately been in and out of the hospital with her over the course of the last few days. She's okay. Baby is okay. Hoping that that stays that way for a little while, but I apologize that this didn't get out sooner. But this is it. This is the last episode of the new year, and it was a pretty good one. Got a chance to sit down and talk with the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational champion, Clay Link of RotoWire.com. And Clay had an amazing year, as you will hear on the episode. He just really cleaned up in every league that he was in. And every once in a while, we get those kind of years. And 2018 is the year of Clay Link. So it was fitting that he was able to win the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational in pretty fairly dominating fashion. I think he did such an amazing job managing it from the beginning end. And as you'll hear, he didn't do it with necessarily an overpowering team. He did it with know-how and tenacity, and really just kind of made sure he had the foot on the pedal at all times, didn't take any days off, and it really paid off for him. A really great in interview and insight into how he did that, so definitely stay tuned for that. Big shout out to Kenneth Cashman of RotoWire.com, who did the intro and outro music for this podcast, and we appreciate him allowing us to use it and giving us great fantasy shirts, because I love the Justin Mason collection. There's new shirts over at the Justin Mason collection. It feels like every time I turn around, Kenneth is putting together a new shirt for me over on RotoWire.com, so definitely go check that out. Big shout out to Fantrax, who was our sponsor this season and hosted the podcast. They won't be hosting the podcast any longer after this season, but that doesn't mean there won't be a podcast. I'm going to continue it on my own. Hopefully those of you who had been subscribing on the old feed have been pushed over to the new feed. And if for some reason the picture is showing a Friends of Fantasy Benefits DFS podcast picture, I apologize. Getting that all situated as I turn the old feed from Friends of Fantasy Benefits DFS pod into this feed for the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational. And we'll be back strong probably in January or February, talking with a bunch of people in the industry, and we're also going to do a lot of other different things. So I'll have some more analysis on the podcast, have different types of interviews, may introduce some new co-hosts. We're gonna try to do a couple different things to make it a little bit more interactive with the listeners, as well as give more fantasy advice as opposed to just being a profile. We'll still have the profiles of all the guys and gals in the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational, but the podcast itself will add some dimensions and add some things. So hopefully people enjoy that as well. So I hope you enjoyed this season of the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational podcast, and I hope you enjoy this interview with Clay Link of RotoWire. Joining me now is Clay Link from RotoWire.com. Champion Clay Link, the first ever champion of the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational. Clay, welcome to the show.
Hey, I appreciate that warm welcome. It's good to be on with you, Justin. I thank you for organizing and running TGFBI. It's a great time, man. It was fun to follow along. Got very addicting, refreshing the standings late, but you know, it was a great time, and thanks to everybody who competed.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. It was It was definitely interesting to run. I've never put something like this together. Of course, to this magnitude, I don't know if there are many people out there that have. It was definitely an interesting experience, but I think was fairly successful. And I mean, it was very successful for you because this has been 2018 was the Clay Link year. Like we were gonna call 2018 like the year of Clay Link, because you absolutely crushed it in not just in the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational, you beat me in and a number of other great fantasy analysts in the CBS AL Only League. You finished top 10 in the online championship, the RotoWire Online Championship on NFBC. You finished second in Tout Wars head-to-head, just behind Jake Seeley, and that's another league that I'm in. You were second, I believe, in AL Labor as well. So, I mean, the question has to be, did you not learn how to share in kindergarten?
Well, I guess it's just I had to concentrate all my success into one season, basically. And I think that'll probably be how it plays out. But I appreciate that, man. Kind words. It wasn't all roses. I had some stinkers in there, too. I think I had a 10th place finish in the NFBC, a 5th and a 7th in the online championship, but draft champions. But, yeah, best season of my life by a mile, and feels good. But it's all about doing it again because – again, this was my best season by far, and you know I don't want it to be a fluke, so it's about trying to make it not a fluke. A lot of common denominators across a lot of leagues, and it was good. You know, things worked out. I caught some breaks, like in the online championship, just how things broke in the draft, getting Jose Ramirez in the third. That should never really happen, but I lucked out there, and you know, it's all about finding those little pockets of value, and I was able to do that later while also avoiding some landmines, you know, getting what I paid back for the guys up top.
Well, and I mean, that's what makes, I think, your invitational run so impressive because, like, if you go down your draft list, it's not like you crushed every round. You know, I mean, you took Stanton in the first, which, you know, Stanton, you know, made money, but it's not like he necessarily delivered first round value, depending on how you, what value system you used. You took Quintana in the 5th, Manny Margot in the 10th, Kiermaier in the 11th, Longoria in the 13th, Robles in the 15th. I mean, how did you win when you didn't necessarily crush the draft? I mean, you obviously made some great picks as well. But, like, you know, I think people think when, like, when you win a contest like this that has an overall component, so many people can, you know, that you have to get super lucky. That's not the case. So how'd you do it?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it was a lot about just the weekly grind, you know, just making sure I didn't miss Fab and doing that for 26 weeks. And, you know, getting Malik Smith was big. But also, you know, there were some guys who were kind of shaky up top. Quintana was definitely a guy that I had to pick my spots with after, like, June. But getting, like, Walker Buehler, Jack Flaherty, those will put a lot of deodorant on some stink, you know. And Blake Treinen was huge. He was a guy that I had really pretty much in every league this year. And that was insane. That was so profitable. Getting a guy like that who's an ace closer, like around pick 150, I think that was about where he was going, was huge. You know, I had Brad Hand, who pitched really well, got a dozen or so other saves from Sir Anthony Dominguez, helped. Trying to think of some other Fab pickups I had that were huge. I guess, you know, Teoscar Hernandez, I kind of took him out late when he was really starting to fade, but, you know, he had 20 homers and he was helpful. You know, it's just about chipping away and grinding, trying to find as much value as I could while, you know, making sure I didn't miss any, you know, any big guys who were still out there on the waiver wire in my specific league, trying to turn over as many stones as I could.
How did you manage the overall component? Because, I mean, obviously in your league, in League 2, while it had some great guys in the league, you were dominating that for a long time. And so did you then turn your attention solely on figuring out ways to pick up points in the overall?
You know, not really. It was essentially, you know, I'd climbed up to like the top 10 or so, and I just thought I was just going to keep doing what I was doing because I didn't have like one pressing categorical need. Malik Smith helped a lot with steals, and, you know, I had JD Martinez providing a ton of power. Christian Yelich was huge. So, with saves too, I just didn't have a big categorical need. I kind of forced a couple two-star guys here and there down the stretch just to be sure I didn't lose ground in like Ks or wins. But for the most part, it's just about trying to set my best lineup every week and not forcing the issue with anything.
Yeah, you scored 144 points in your league out of the max 150. So, I mean, it was a pretty dominating and 42-point lead over Ariel Cohen, who finished in second in League 2, is pretty amazing. I mean, did you have a strategy coming in that you needed to have balance, or were you taking best player available? Like, what was your strategy coming into the draft that made you so successful later on?
Well, one thing that kind of changed the game a little bit for me was that it was, you know, one catcher, two util spots. And I think that's how most leagues should be moving with 14 hitters, just because catcher is so terrible. And so with that, you know, I wasn't so focused on, you know, I got to fill an infield spot in my first three picks. I got to do this or that. Typically, I wouldn't grab three outfielders to start, you know, JD Yelich. It's not typically something I would do, but I learned through this that, I mean, don't overthink that early on. Just get the best player available, especially if you have two util spots. Getting three outfielders to start is not a problem at all. You can always find guys in the infield to supplement. So yeah, you know, in other drafts I kind of did overthink that and was like, well, you know, I got two outfielders, I should take like Corey Seager or somebody like that who was a bust. Obviously hurt all year, but I think it wasn't about having a specific plan, but just being more flexible and more open to how I created my roster in the draft.
Are you a projections guy? I mean, do you follow projections pretty closely when you draft or auction, or do you kind of have a little bit more wiggle room for yourself?
I do a ranking, a personal set of rankings, which we have as part of the RotoWire roundtable with a bunch of guys, and that's fun. I don't do my own set of projections, but I do look at, you know, Steamer, Zips, the bat. Even, you know, I want to give Derek Cardi some love because the bat kicked ass. You know, it was my first time really following that throughout the season, and I didn't play a ton of DFS late, but he's got a great thing going with that, and that was sweet. And yeah, I'd look at those and take those into account in the preseason, especially when there's like a big disparity. You know, somebody that I'm really low on, but they're kind of like, you know, they kind of have at a reasonable level. And Chris Liss here at the site has a system where he's able to run the Steamer projections through evaluation and get a set of dollar values, and that's pretty nice. That was pretty helpful too on the blog this year. And you know, it's about making sure you don't miss anything particularly, but also keeping expectations in check a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I was really impressed with you when we left the Tout Wars head-to-head auction table. I looked down at my team. I went, okay, I did exactly what I wanted to do. I felt really good about my chances. And I was looking over other people's teams, and Jake Seeley, who ended up winning the league, you know, fairly, you know, well, I don't want to say he ran away with it or anything, because I think you and Dr. Rota were right in there till the end. But I liked his team, but I loved your team coming out of draft. And I was like, if there's one person that's going to challenge me, it's Clay.
Yeah, man, I liked your team a lot, and you and Jake were really kind of the guys who were on top of the scoring system. No disrespect to anybody else in that league, but it's just, you know, we moved from categories to points this year. And I think the one out equals 1 point thing just maybe some people didn't fully grasp how much that inflated the value of starting pitching. So you were all over it. You were you spent probably what, like 50% of your budget, more than that?
It was on closer pitching? To 80% of my budget on pitching.
See, I like that though. I mean, I think if we were doing that again this year, like right now, even I would probably follow a similar path.
Well, and like if I will write an article on my Tout Wars, season at some point, and it's probably going to be process over results or the title will probably be process over results because the process, I think, was smart. I don't want to say it was necessarily right. I think what you did actually, because you were pretty close, I think, to 50-50, I think that was probably the right process. But, you know, considering the amount of injuries, I think at one point I had like 18 guys on my disabled list in Tout Wars head-to-head, and I was in it till like the last 6 weeks of the season.
Yeah, you definitely were.
So, I think that's one of those things that people don't pay attention to enough. And I think people in the Invitational struggled with a little bit. It was kind of knowing the rules and being able to use those to your advantage. I think some people in the Invitational really didn't think about the overall component when they were putting their team together and ended up with unbalanced teams, hoping that they could address that later. And I think one of the things people forget to do is kind of, hey, you can use the rules to your advantage, or at least you need to make sure you bake that into your strategies.
Yeah, man, I couldn't agree more. That's something that, I try to beat the drum on, is just know your league rules. Read that constitution from front to back many times, because you can get an edge there. You really can, and I think that's huge. Plug your league settings into some sort of software, whether it's the RotoWire software or another, just to get an idea of what those values look like, and try to get an edge any way you can. But in Tout, yeah, man, I thought you had a good strategy, and kind of worked out pretty well for both of us. I would say though that I could have had basically the same offense with a lot less spent on it, because my top hitter was actually Carlos Santana when I was looking at the points. Xander Bogaerts, like guys who I spent actually paid up for in that auction, like George Springer, ended up returning a fair amount less than I paid for him. So, my top three earners by a mile in that league were Verlander, Nola, and Snell. And I think, if I'd just maybe put a little bit, maybe like $30 to $50 extra dollars towards the pitching side, I could have maybe pulled it out.
Yeah, I think if I had probably put about $20 or $30 more towards the hitting side and avoided some of the landmines in my pitching,
that's so huge, man.
Oh, it really is. I mean, for someone like me who, like I said, I want to say I spent $201. On pitching of the 260, $201 of the, so 77%. My most expensive hitters were JT Realmuto, Daniel Murphy, Kevin Kiermaier, and Bradley Zimmer. So like that tells you what my offense looked like. But then I also lost, Clayton Kershaw for a while. Robbie Ray didn't turn out to be who he was. I lost Johnny Cueto, Jeff Samardzija, Sonny Gray wasn't what he was. And so for me to even finish in the top five, I felt pretty good about that, considering the players that I drafted did not pan out at all. But I think the strategy worked fairly well.
Yeah, man. I had a couple, Luke Weaver, I was on Fairmount. He was a huge buzz. Mm-hmm. Denelson Lamet, thankfully I got out late in draft season because the price was pretty high. Of course, he tore his UCL. So it's about minimizing those. And, it's a lot about luck. I realize that too. Next year I could be in this, fortunes could flip a little bit and I'd have five or so landmines and you have two. So it's, it's hard to do that. But if you're able to skip around them, you can bring home the prize.
Yeah, definitely don't pull a Justin Mason, which would be, because last year was my year that I won a ton of leagues, and just I think I was in like 15 leagues, won like nine, finished in the top three of I want to say like 12 of those leagues. And then this year has been a complete disaster for me. So I could not avoid the landmines virtually in every league. I think I won one league out of 17, and it's been pretty disappointing. So just don't pull a Justin Mason.
Well, I would say that, you know, even the best players have that, you know. It's hard to do it year after year after year. And, you know, even if like one of like Snell or Clevenger or Bueller had blown their elbow out, we wouldn't be having this conversation, because I had those guys in most spots, and it wouldn't have been nearly as good of a year if even one of those guys went down.
Yeah. And I mean, for you to grab like all three of those guys as late as you did, I mean, you got Bueller in the 20th round, Flaherty in the 24th round, and who, I mean, Eduardo Rodriguez in the 22nd round. I mean, you really killed like the back end of your draft. Malik Smith in the 19th. In the Invitational, you really just crushed that back end. Were you looking for upside at that point of a draft, or were those guys you just had circled that you knew you were going to get a lot of shares of?
Yeah, I mean, that's right. I TGFBI was like one of the, like maybe the only league where I didn't have Snell, but still applies to all those other guys. And yeah, I think really late in the draft, it's just about looking at plausible upside. You know, I don't necessarily need a guy who's playing every day on my bench if they're just a middling, I don't know, like Matt Duffy or somebody like that. Matt Duffy is fine, but I don't necessarily need somebody like that. I want to maybe go for the home run ball, you know, swing for the fences with my late picks, especially when there is that overall component. Just taking into account what could happen. I forgot that I actually drafted Malik Smith. I think I dropped him and picked him back up. But, yeah, it's just about looking at what could go right and seeing, you know, playing the waiting game as long as you can. I get that it's hard to do when there are injuries early on, but I was fortunate enough to where I could wait on a lot of guys, see what happens. You know, Bueller didn't start in the majors, nor did Flaherty, but I was afforded the – With good health, afforded the chance to wait and see what happened.
This would usually be about the point where I'd start asking you questions about how you got into the industry, talk a little bit more about yourself in that kind of regards. I'm going to hold off on doing that because I want to have you back on next season, maybe during draft season, and give people some more advice on how they can help their drafts, and then talk more about you. So why don't we're going to start the wrap up here. Why don't you tell people where you can reach on social media, and then give yourself some plugs of all the amazing stuff you guys do over at RotoWire.
Cool, man. Yeah. At Clay W. Link on Twitter. Yeah, we're already pretty much into our off season magazine prep over at RotoWire, but we're going to be having like a round table ranking posted it pretty early on here in the off season, just kind of a consensus rank of what we got going on. We'll have projections launching. Last year was earlier than ever. It was December 1st, I believe, or December 5th, something like that. First week of December. That'll probably be the case again this year. Off season podcast as well over at RotoWire. So we got a great crew. You know, James Anderson, I think, is the best prospect guy in the business. DVR, of course, doing tons of great work, and Zola, Collette, we got a great group. We'll have articles throughout the off season, and we'll start back up full time every week with the pod, or every day, weekday on the podcast coming up, I think in January, and SiriusXM as well, once they move back to baseball talk. And hopefully you'll be available to come on and talk with James and I, or James and, or myself and DVR.
I'll come on anytime you guys want me to. And if you guys aren't listening to the RotoWire podcast, I don't know what you're doing. Especially, I miss like when you guys graded wrestlers on the 2080 scale. Like
that was great.
That was one of my like I kept listening, even though like I wasn't like you like super into prospects necessarily. But I kept listening at that point just because I wanted to hear you guys rank like the Ultimate Warrior and Mr. Perfect and I'm not
funny,
even like
man.
A wrestling guy anymore. I just like you know, from back when I was like 10 and 12 and stuff like that, and being able to like remember those and being like, oh my god, I totally forgot about Mr. Perfect.
I'm glad you enjoyed that, man, because I had fun doing that as well, putting the, you know, grading like their entrance and their finishing move on the 20 to 80 scale. It was pretty fun. We tried to do something similar to that on the Thursday Prospect mm-hmm. show every year. This year we were doing like best hip hop collaborations and stuff like that, but that's good. We're going to have to figure out a new one for next season.
Which, yeah, if you're not listening to the Thursday show, at least, like, at bare minimum, listen to the Thursday show, especially if you're in a dynasty league or you play in deeper formats. Or really, I mean, even in redrafts nowadays, like, you need to know prospects. Like, if mm-hmm. you didn't know who Juan Soto was this year, then you missed out on a potential, you know, game-changing player for you in fantasy. So,
yeah, I think that's really important because – especially with, you know, how we saw free agents treated last season, it's like teams are more, they kind of want to just give these young guys a chance and have, you know, the older guys are kind of pricing themselves out. And so you're paying these guys basically the league minimum when you're getting a lot of return on them. I think they're, as long as they get that extra year control and whatnot, you know, they're more willing to give these guys a look early. And so you have to at least have a decent knowledge of the top prospects, because they're going to be difference makers in fantasy.
Well, especially, I mean, if you look over at the two early mocks that I've ran this last month, I mean, you've got guys like Ronald Cunha, who is mm-hmm. going as a first-round pick in 15-team leagues. Vlad Guerrero Jr., who hasn't even made a major league debut, going 50.7 in the two early mocks. So like if you're not listening to prospect podcasts, and like you said, James is one of the best in the business.
Yeah.
You know,
he's awesome.
He's a great dude as well, but I mean, just an amazing prospect guy. For a while, like I was subscribing to RotoWire just because I wanted James's list, and then I wanted the draft software. Like I needed those two things. They were essential parts of my prep every year. And, you know, so definitely got to check out everything over at RotoWire. Check out the podcast. Listen to Clay on SiriusXM. And, yeah, I mean, if you're starting really early prep, RotoWire sounds like they are too. So go over to RotoWire.com.
Yeah. RotoWire. And RotoWire.com/free, you get 10 days. You don't have to put a credit card in or anything. You just, if you don't want to sign up when the 10 days are up, you don't want to sign up, and that's fine. But, yeah, give it a shot.
Definitely. Well, Clay, thank you so much for joining me.
Justin, great talking with you, man. Thanks for having me, and thanks again for running the show this season. It was a lot of fun.
And we'll definitely be back next year, because I got to take down the champ.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's just fun competing against the best, and it's kind of weird now having the target on me. We'll see what happens, but it's fun just because it's such a great community. It's fun competing against the best in the business.
Yeah, it was a really fun experience, and I can't wait for year two.
Yeah, same, man. Keep me posted.
Definitely
because
will.
Because I definitely, obviously, going to be back, and I'll be anxiously anticipating that draft kicking off.
That's going to do it for another episode and season of the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational Podcast. Big thanks to Clay Link for coming on, and big congratulations to him as well, because he had a fantastic season. Big shout out to RotoWire.com and Kenneth Cashman's for the intro and outro music, as well as our sponsor, Fantrax.com, where you should go play all of your leagues for any sports, hockey, basketball, all of them. You can reach me on Twitter at JustinMasonFWFB, or you can email me, JustinMasonFantasy@gmail.com. Go check out TGFBI.com, because TGFBI.com is the only place you can go and sign up for the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational. So if you think you've got what it takes, go ahead and sign up. See if you can take down Clay Link and some of the other guys that were so great at it. It wasn't me. I wasn't great at it. I was great at running it, hopefully. And hopefully I was entertaining enough to listen to on this podcast all season long, or at least I brought on interesting enough guests to listen to. So I hope you stay subscribed, so that way when we come back online here at the beginning of the year, you get all the podcasts. Going to have some great guests, including like the great Paul Sporer, who has agreed to come on and be my guest for next season. I'm sure I can get Jason Collette on, and I'm going to try to get like Steve Gardner and some other fantastic guys in the industry, and then maybe some people you don't know as well, like Batflip Crazy or Brian Slack from Baseball HQ or, you know, other amazing guys in the industry that you haven't had a chance to listen to. So definitely continue to subscribe. Give us a rate and review. Really helps us out. So that's going to do it for this episode and season of the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational. I hope you enjoyed this season. Thank you for listening. Have a great baseball offseason. First place in my league. Got a blockbuster on the way and a pickup on my sleeve. They call my team insane. Say I'm the one to beat. So you better bring your A game and start playing, because every single week another win for me. Yo, commissioner, you can just pay me now. City win first place, then take a bow. Finish on top, I'ma set the standard. Don't believe me, you could check the standing. When I draft, I make smart selections. Got more sleepers than a narcoleptic. Meet your match, kid, my lineup's nasty. It's far-fetched, thinking you might catch me. No surprise, I'm taking home the prize. Only time I rest is a playoff bye. Make amazing finds off the waiver wire. All day and night, better stay retired. See me in first, all proud and cozy. Bro, please, I can't even count my trophies. Bragging, even with my bats are slumping, I'ma pack a punch, stat track a junkie. But one they don't wanna play, first place in my league. Got a blockbuster on the way, and a pickup.